On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing. Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Actually, it's a pleasure to be with you. The pleasure is all yours. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I did that already. Welcome to the program. This is the Ron Van Dam Show. In case you didn't know what you were doing and you're in some kind of drunken stupor, or you're waking up with a gigantic hangover, or you just kind of are half asleep, or it's the afternoon and you can't stand watching a television anymore, and there's just nothing to do. You've had like 17 cups of coffee, and it's just not working out. Or good evening. What a lousy day you had today. It was awful, wasn't it? Ugh. Sitting in traffic and dealing with all these people who know less than you do and having to put up with them. It's an awful, 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 awful life that you have. Or good night. Just before you go to bed, some people listen to this show because it puts you to sleep. Within 10 minutes of this show, you're pretty much out cold, and you have no idea what happened the rest of the show. But that's my duty. It's my job. I'm a freaking sedative. I am Ron Van Dam. That's what they call me. You have to call people something. So that's my designation. Wouldn't it be interesting if people walked around with those little stupid freaking name tags that they give out at these little cocktail mixers and things, and these single date things, and there's a little, it's a thing you buy at Staples or Office Depot, which I guess is going to be the same pretty soon, and it says, "Hello, my name is," in nice, beautiful print, and then you write in magic marker under that, in a black marker, you write your name in capital letters to the point where it looks like you're in kindergarten, and you're being introduced to the girl with the block sitting next to you. It's just so infantile and so stupid. You know, these corporate mixers, I'm the president of IBM. Hello, my name is Bob. I mean, what? God, man, that just doesn't fit your face. Wouldn't it be interesting if everybody walked... And by the way, when you put those sticky things on your expensive clothes and you peel it off, that white adhesive still sticks to your clothes and you can never get it out and you feel like suing somebody, but you don't know who to sue because you don't know who makes these stupid things. It's a conundrum. Spell that. THAT. But wouldn't it be interesting if we all got used to wearing these stupid friggin' name tags, and everybody, whenever they went out to the post office or to the convenience store or the not-so-convenience store or dry cleaners or something at a supermarket, you would wear this thing on your lapel and it would say, "Hello, my name is," and then in big crayon, it would have, "Hello, my name is Karen." It's Karen or something like that. And would people be more friendly? Some people would. Some people would say, "Thank you for shopping here, Karen. Thank you for shopping here, Balzabub." You know, it would be interesting. Or it could work to one's advantage when you're in the supermarket and you're squeezing your melons to see which one is ripe for the trip home, you know, and put it in your shopping cart. And a beautiful, beautiful woman comes up to you and says, "Hello, Ron." And then I look at her little name tag over you know, on her bottom lapel, and I respond by saying, "Hello, boob." Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't think that would work. I don't think it would work. I think I'd laugh all day. I'd just be laughing. Everybody wearing white. I wouldn't wear the name tag. I'd be the only person on the planet that wouldn't be wearing the name tag. I refuse to wear a name tag. I refuse. I refuse to have people look at my tit, as luxurious as it may be, and find my name and my designation by staring at my breast. That would bother me as a man. As a woman, wouldn't that be like really bothersome? Or hot? I don't know. Do you do that when you go to the supermarket? Do you squeeze the fruit? No, I'm serious. Do you squeeze the fruit? Do you squeeze the melons? Do you pinch the grapes? Do you? This sounds like just a lot of dirty talk, doesn't it? But I'm being serious. Do you squeeze the stuff? I got to admit to you, I do, because it's the only way. You don't want to bring home fruit that is just never going to get ripe, that's like as hard as a bowling ball. You don't want to do that. So you buy the stuff when it's either just about to be perfect or is already perfect if you plan to get home and eat it that day, especially with avocados. You know what an avocado is? Yeah, it's that little green thing. Looks like an inflated lime or something. But when you squeeze an avocado, you can tell exactly what it's going to be like inside. If it's too mushy, then it's... If it's hard, it's just you can't even deal with it. But you can feel when it's just right. But here's the problem, kids, is that people from all over the globe and all different countries and all kinds of Ebola things are squeezing the fruit that I'm going to be eating. Now, avocado is not so bad because nobody eats the skin of an avocado because you can die. Because it's so thick, it's like eating like rawhide, I would assume. I have never eaten rawhide. I'm assuming that it's like that. But squeezing a peach or a plum, that's like not good because I do put that stuff in my mouth. You eat the skin on these particular fruits, some of you don't, I know, which is fine, whatever. But I'm saying that's like, I'm just thinking that putting that stuff in your mouth when people have taken their hands, I don't know what you've been doing with your hands. I mean, you could have come off of a 3-day masturbation run. I have no idea what you've been doing. And now you're squeezing my lemons and your melons again. Nobody eats the skin of a melon, so I think we're okay on that because you only eat the interior of the melon. But the grapes and the tomatoes, some people squeeze tomatoes. If the tomatoes are too firm, they're going to taste like awful. But if they're just a little plump and they're a little juicy, that's perfection for a tomato. But we eat the skins of the tomato. And you're putting your freaking hands all over my fruit, man. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? I'm just making a point. It's really going nowhere. It's not a comedy routine. I'm not Seinfeld or anything like that. I just point things out. I take my finger, my index finger, and I go, hey, look at this situation. Did you ever think about that before? And you probably say, no, I didn't. And now I have some substance in your life. That's really all I'm going for, some kind of substance in your life. Yeah, that's all I care about. Substance in your life, right? That's all I care about.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today?
Now, again, it's we're in a pattern. We're in a weather pattern here that is very predictable. It's like being married. You know exactly what's going to happen the next day, exactly what they're going to say, exactly the things that you shouldn't say. It's like being married is this weather pattern. And all of these storms are coming from the west. They come across the country. They're like taking a train or something. They're going through Chicago, through Pennsylvania, and then they swing up to New England and dump all the crap here. We're in that weather pattern right now. And oddly enough, as if that weren't enough, we're in also another weather pattern that comes off of the Texas, New Orleans area along the Gulf, and then it pushes up the coast, up 95 to New England. So we're getting double socked by these systems. And when two nasty systems coming from the West and another one coming from the South, when they meet up in the New England area, we get dumped on, such as we have been for a couple of weeks now. Prior to a couple of weeks, as you know, pretty much nothing. And I was saying to Tori on the show yesterday, we've pretty much screwed this whole thing up because we were saying to each other, this is going to be a really mild winter. And as soon as we said that, like God was listening or something. And I think God's a follower of the show because God said, and I refer to God as you know, a deity, said, oh, you think that you're going to have it easy? I'm going to make some changes. I'm going to change the wind pattern and like screw with you. And that's what happened. So be very, very nice about this. That's what's been happening. So when the storms come up, it brings like some warmer weather, especially from the south. But when the storms clear, I'm boring myself right now. I've just noticed I'm totally boring myself. That's not a good sign. Not a good sign. When I want to switch over myself to the Christian Science Monitor channel, which is like useless to me, then I know that it's time to change the subject. What I'm trying to say is, after these storms, it gets really, really cold, and it's probably really, really cold now, and that whole bit was really boring. I don't care what you're wearing. I couldn't care less. Wear nothing, I don't care. I just totally don't care. It's a certain, isn't there a luxury to not caring about things? You know, when you're a good soul and you're a wonderful person, you care about people. Oh, the poor person. Oh, look, oh, the poor, oh, what you've been through, the poor person. Oh, my God. And we should all feel like that because we should. But then you reach a stage sometimes, some days, some years, where it's like, I'm sorry, but like, whatever. I just kind of don't care. I don't care. I care about the people that I, but you, I don't care about you. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I'm sorry. Somebody else will, but I'm sorry. No, not me. Sorry. Maybe next time, but not now. There's so much energy that I expend caring about myself. Like, oh, what's going to happen to me? Like, am I all right? How am I going to handle me? I am annoying and I have to handle that every day. So like, how can I really care that much about you? I mean, I can make believe and go, oh, I can make the sad face. I can make the sad droopy face, you know, with the frown and the little tear coming out of the eye, you know, those things. I can do that. I can make it sound like I care, but you know what? Maybe later, but not right now. Yeah, I'll go, that's a sad. You know, people go, oh, you know, there are dogs that I'm going to have to put your dog to sleep. Oh. And look, oh, those people in Africa. Oh, my gosh. When it flies in their face and oh my God. Oh, that's awful. Would you care to donate to the cause? Nah, because I really don't care that much. I just got my own problems. Ron, you know, you are such a cold person. Nah, I don't care. I mean, I really, really do care. I just don't have time right now because I'm so busy caring about myself. I am so complicated. I think I'm easy, but then I realize I'm not. I've got colic or something going on here. I gotta burp myself continually. I have gas. I have to deal with gas every day. So, your problems? Seriously, I don't care. You know why I don't care? Because I think you can handle yourself. I think you can handle yourself. If I can handle myself, which I can't do, then you can certainly handle yourself. Or if I've taken the time to handle myself successfully, then you can take the time and handle yourself successfully too. So about myself, total caring, total nurturing, caring belief system, the whole bit. You, not so much. Maybe a little bit, but not enough to make you happy. No way. I've only got so much. I have destroyed half of my brain cells over my lifetime. So, like, I'm down like a quart. I mean, I got nothing for you. I would like to. If I had the capacity, I'd care. But I don't have that capacity. I've spent it. I've shot my load. I can't care for you. Not as much as I should. I'm not Catholic or Christian I'm not. And if you are, I love you. And I say that because I don't love you, but it sounds good to say that. I respect you. Let's put it that way. I respect you. I totally respect you because respecting you takes absolutely no effort on my part whatsoever. I can just say it and be done with it. I don't have to expend any energy. I don't have to pay you or anything like that. So, yeah, whatever. I respect you. Fine. Good. I've never been to confession, and I don't know what that's like. I don't know. I think to go to confession, you have to be spiritually connected to the confession process, read the manual and all that kind of stuff. But I've never been to one. And I'm wondering if that would cleanse me. And I'm thinking, yeah, if I were a part of that system, it probably would cleanse me. But if I'm not part of that system, which at this particular time in my life I'm not, then I think it would just be like sitting down and just talking. The only thing I don't get about the confession thing, and excuse my total ignorance, because that's what I'm dealing with myself. They put up a divider between you, the confession person, and the priest on the other side of this partition. And you can kind of see the priest, but you kind of can't. They've got some kind of cookie cutter screen going on in the middle. And as I've never been in a confession booth, or lost anything in a booth where I had to go into it to find something, I don't know what it's like there inside. I think it's a couple of benches, and one side is you, and the other side is the priest. And if you happen to be a priest, one side is you, and the other side is the confessioner. And I think the confession person says all the horrible things that they think they did according to the laws of that particular religion, and the priest says that'll be $50. You know, why don't they do that? Why don't confession? And I'm not trying to be funny. Well, actually, I am. That's why I do this. And I think that's why you listen to this. All right, so I am trying to be funny. All right, I am trying to be funny. Instead of the priest saying, and by the way, I'm taking a large chance in talking about religion at all, anything that has to do with it or the process thereof or certain religious. It's a bad thing to talk about on the radio. But I do this out of love and out of, like, total ignorance. I'm totally ignorant on this subject matter. Instead of the priest saying, oh, okay, I forgive you, my son, my daughter, whatever, I forgive you. Instead of, like, the priest saying, then that'll be, like, two Hail Marys, wouldn't it be interesting if the priest said, that'll be $50? Because, you see, the church needs money on which to operate to pay the heating bill and hopefully the air conditioning bill, because some of those churches, man, are like ovens. Best thing that ever happened to a church, installing an air conditioning system. Keep your parishioners comfortable. That's what I always say. I mean, I would put a sign out in front of the church, Blessed Sacrament of the Holy Ghost, air conditioned. I would definitely do that. Anyway, so, But they have to pass a basket around, as I understand it, in order to make donations, and it's done pretty much on a volunteer basis. In other words, if you want to put in $2, fine. If you want to put in $20, fine, et cetera, whatever. Some people put in a portion of their salary. Very nice, very good, very nice. Those are expensive places to upkeep, and it needs money. So wouldn't it be interesting if the priest actually started like levying fines out to people that do horrible things? If you commit adultery, I would say that which should be like $150. And through the confession window comes that little basket on a robotic arm, and you put the money in, and you're absolved, man. You're absolved. That would keep people from doing things that are out of line and not following the rules, because you don't want to start, you know, a monetary fine. That's like, and the church would have to put out a warrant for you if you don't pay these penance fines. If you actually hurt somebody and assaulted somebody, we're talking a couple of $1,000 is what we're talking for the church. I really think that that would be better than I forgive you. I think I forgive you is like, okay, then I can do something bad again because I can't control myself. And don't worry, all I got to do is like sit in a room on a bench and say something and I'm forgiven. Like, that is a deal. Well, how about if you're actually like, if it costs you money, and the confession church people, the priest says, I'm levying a fine on you like a judge in a courtroom. Mm-hmm. And you can't even argue. You don't have a case. You are just going to pay the piper, so to speak. It's basically a voluntary system in most religions. The Jewish religion, who I'm going to piss off next, wait your turn, I'll get to you. The Jewish religion, they actually send you an invoice. I'm not kidding about this. This is a true story. As a matter of fact, this is almost a funny story, but it's actually true, and this is like freaky.
And now it's time for one of Ron's funny stories. You could practically hear the quotes around funny, couldn't you?
I was a young child. I was in Teaneck, New Jersey. That's where I was brought up. Teaneck, New Jersey, which is a bedroom community of New York City. No more than 3-4 miles down the road from the George Washington Bridge. And everybody in Teaneck, New Jersey worked in New York City. So it was like New York City, but like a bedroom community. Like Braintree is to Boston, let's say. Okay, all right, okay, okay, okay. And my father belonged to a synagogue. My mother, not so much. And you're saying, Ron, like what? My father was like very kind of semi-religious. My mother, I don't know, she wasn't. She would go to the synagogue sometimes just for kicks and for the social things, but not, you know, she was not into that stuff. But my father was, and you don't screw with someone who's religious. You respect it, and if they want your family to go and the rest of the family isn't religious, you go out of respect. I spent a whole lot of time in my life learning the word respect, and I still follow it to this day. I'm one of the most respectful people you'll ever meet, even though on the radio I sound like an asshole. I'm really not. I'm extremely respectful. This is an act. It's a theatrical performance that I do for you like a puppet on a string, which I accept. I accept that. I accept that as my fate. Some reluctantly, but I do. I do accept. I actually, I do. So my father belonged to this synagogue, and it was a reform synagogue, which means the Jewish religion is split into three different parts. There is reform, conservative, and orthodox. Orthodox is like, don't fuck with me. I'm Jewish. Don't fuck with me. That's what they are. They have rules for eating. They have rules for what they eat on. They have rules for when they can drive a car. I mean, it's just like a rule book like you wouldn't believe. It's worse than the NFL. Conservative, also very restrictive, very restrictive, very, very, very club Jew. reform, and I say this all respectfully, reform Judaism is like, all right, you're just throwing a label on me. That's what reform Judaism is. I'm Jewish. You can throw that label on me. That's it. So he was reform, which is like Jew light. It's less fat and lower calories. I remember my mother wasn't that religious, but she would go along with everything, as I said. I remember one day I was coming home from school, and it was a grade school, because I don't remember much before that because of all the drugs I did in kindergarten. So I'm coming home from grade school, and I remember my mother's opening up the mail, and she goes, "What?" And I said, "Mom, what is it?" And she wasn't really talking to me. She was just talking to the general air, but she was pissed. And she says, "I cannot believe that the synagogue sent us an invoice." And I listened to the whole thing. And when my father came home, they had a little bit of not a shouting match, but more of an inquiry session at a loud decibel. And apparently, from what I understood at that young, tender age, instead of passing a basket around in a synagogue, this particular synagogue, and I assume others, I don't know, but I assume, they actually send an invoice in a mail of the amount of money that you owe. So, in other words, there are membership fees to belong to the synagogue. There are membership fees, and they send you an invoice. And I don't know if it was tax deductible. I don't know why they do that. I do not know. But it's considered a donation, even though it was a membership fee. Right now, the IRS may not consider that to be the same thing, but it's because of religious, it probably would be. But that was my first lesson in that, and I found that to be awkward. Because that's not volunteer. That's like I'm sending you an invoice. You owe the synagogue this money because you're a Jew and you go here. I couldn't believe it. And as if that weren't enough, and it probably would be for anybody, as I got a little bit older, I remember going to the synagogue with my father, and it was one of the high holy days. It's like Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year's Day. They have their holy days, the Hanukkah, the Passover, that kind of thing. And you had to have tickets. And I remember seeing my father handing over tickets to the guy at the door, like it was a movie theater. Seriously, man. Like it was a movie theater or a play that you're seeing. And I was very observant. That's my destiny was to be over observant and over analytical and overthinking. And to this day, I suffer with that horrible disease of which there is no name and no medication. Upon doing further research at that young age, I found out that you have to buy tickets to get into the synagogue for the High Holy Days, like it was the premiere of a new motion picture. And that also floored me and somewhat bothered me. Now, I don't know if that's still being done in synagogues. I don't know. I assume it is, but I do not know. So I'm not criticizing anything. I'm just telling you a story of what happened when I was a kid. And of course, my reaction to that was, I don't understand. I don't understand this. So I guess there are various ways of collecting money in order to support your religious facility. I get that. But I'm just saying that's what happened.
And that was another funny story from Ron. Wait, that was supposed to be funny? Wow.
Yeah, it was supposed to be funny. What's your problem?
Hey, this is Bobby Marone, former heavyweight contender. But I hung up my boxing gloves recently and put on my chef's hat to open my brand new restaurant.
It's Headshots, Bobby.
Headshots. Headshot serves some of the best Italian crayons.
That's cuisine.
Italian cuisine in the area. You come in and I'll give you a meal that'll knock you out. Ah, crayons.
That one says meatballs, Bobby.
Meatballs are the best you've ever tasted. Come in for my 1-2 punch pasta and daily lunch specials. Every day, daily lunch specials are every day.
We're all good on that one, Bobby. Let's keep going.
All right. So listen, come into...
It's called Headshots, Bobby. Headshots.
Headshots, thank you. Headshots, and ask for me. What the hell is my name?
Headshots is located downtown at the corner of Flange and Hassenpfeffer. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner if Bobby remembers the keys and where the restaurant is.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too. But sometimes he says bad words.
We're going to talk now to a gay and lesbian organization. I don't know what they call themselves. It's LGBT, which is like a BLT. I don't know what that is. But gay and lesbian organizations all throughout the country are somewhat celebrating the onslaught of gay marriage. I mean, that's which is a positive thing. I believe half of the states, or even more, gay marriage is now recognized, and you can get married if you're gay, and that's a wonderful thing because there's absolutely no reason why they should not enjoy the pitfalls of marriage like we do. Or like everybody else does, and say we as if I'm on like on one side and they're on the other. It's not the case. We're all like together. We're all one. We just have different sexual preferences. Anyway, there is a big convention going on in Denver. I know that you're probably not able to go this weekend, but nonetheless, you can participate. And I mean, we need to be progressive. We need to move forward and accept everybody for who they are, especially when it's totally, totally innocent and fine and wonderful. So let's talk to them now. Let me raise them on the magic phone of love. I am joined by Russell Roybal, who is Task Force Deputy Executive Director. He's a native of San Diego, California. And Sue Hyde, who's Task Force Creating Change Conference Director. And she's a resident of Cambridge, Massachusetts, right around the corner. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning. How's the snow out there?
Oh, it's not too good. It just doesn't stop. It's getting a little bit scary because at a point it'll be bigger than I am, and I'm rather tall, so it's pretty weird. So, Sue, you're not in Cambridge at this time?
I'm not. I'm in beautiful Denver, Colorado, to all of my family and friends in the Boston area, I sure hope that you've got your snow shovels and your ice melt ready. And for those coming to Creating Change, safe travels. Get out on time.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful day here today, actually. It's just cold, but there's no snow. So people can hop on a plane and go to Denver because there's a conference going on there from February 4th until 8th in just a few days it starts. And tell us what's going on out there in Denver.
Sure. The Creating Change is the nation's premier social justice conference and the largest gathering of LGBTQ activists, leaders, and organizers in the U.S. Founded in 1988, there were 300 people at that first conference. We're expecting this year, the 27th conference, over 4,000 people. Wow. In Denver for trainings, workshop sessions, general sessions, film screenings, caucuses, networking, you name it. There is something for everyone at the Creating Change Conference, and you can get more information about the conference by going to creatingchange.org.
Yeah, Creating Change is, it kind of started as a gay and lesbian movement, but it's kind of starting to represent a lot of issues that need change, a lot of social issues.
You know, that's absolutely right. We had huge progress in 2014, particularly around marriage equality, with great victories in the courts. Now 38 states recognize same-sex unions. And yet, at the same time, we saw the tragic killings of young black men in Ferguson, Missouri, in Cleveland, Ohio. There were 12 murders of transgender women of color in the United States in 2014. And the Supreme Court issued its ruling in Hobby Lobby that impacts decisions that women can make about their health care.
Mm-hmm.
So we need more progress in 2015, and that is what the Creating Change Conference is really all about.
It's interesting because all of a sudden it seems to me, and I'm sure it's not the case, but to the layperson such as myself, it seems like all of a sudden people are starting to speak up, where for a couple of decades it kind of sensed that everybody was just going along with the flow and whatever happens, happens, and I don't like it, but it's a horrible thing, but here we go. But now, I guess with social media, all of a sudden everybody's kind of standing behind their thoughts and opinions now, and are starting to do something about it.
Yeah, the you know, social media has been a great thing in terms of organizing, activating people. Folks can follow us on social media and follow stuff at the conference. Our hashtag on Twitter is hashtag CC15. That's CC15, and our handle for Twitter is at the Task Force. And you know, it's a new day with technology and being able to get information quickly and spread it around quickly and get people activated. You know, there are lots of things that people can do. They don't necessarily always have to come out and protest. They can do stuff on their Facebook and Twitter pages. But it is a great new organizing tool, that social media, and we're excited to be able to use that at the task force. And if folks can't make it to Denver and want to follow us, not only by our hashtag, we also are live streaming our general sessions, and folks can find that information at thetaskforce.org/live and follow the not only the general sessions, the plenary sessions, but also interviews with folks on the ground here in Denver.
See, you can be there without going there. That's a great thing. It wasn't like that a while ago. You know, they should have classes, and you probably do very well at this, but they should have classes in how to protest. Because a lot of times, groups of protest actually piss off the very people that they're trying to get on their side, because they cause such disruption that people say, hey, you know, why are you bothering me? I agree with you. It becomes kind of a fine line. It becomes almost an art these days, I suppose.
Well, you know, at the Creating Change Conference, we'll have sessions on many topics related to mobilizing and becoming active and more active on behalf of LGBTQ people, including some sessions about how to organize and run in a safe way demonstrations and protests. So we believe that we should be in the streets. We believe that we should be in the halls of the legislature. We believe that we should be sitting in the seats in those legislatures.
Mm-hmm.
We are a fully operating activist organization supporting our folks who are out doing the work in the many ways that they do.
Yeah. So what can the public do who are listening to you now and they can't get a ticket to Denver within a few days, or they got a dentist appointment or something? What can they do to get involved and to find out more? I mean, being aware of the cause is one thing, but participating is something else. How do you participate?
Well, they can, of course, go to our website, creatingchange.org, and get all the program information, watch the live stream at thetaskforce.org/live. And The other thing they can do is love the people and support the people in their life who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer. And, of course, vote. Voting is a very important right and responsibility we have in the United States, and it's important not just to sit on social media, but to take some action, too.
Yes. Does sending emails to state reps and things like that, does that make a difference?
Of course it does. Every elected official is interested in the views and the opinions and the desires of their constituents. And it does matter to communicate directly with them, either via email, a written letter, a phone call, and even especially a face-to-face visit. During the marriage equality struggles in Massachusetts, in which I was very involved, one of our best methods of changing the minds of legislators around the issue was organizing families headed by same-sex couples to go in and visit with their legislative representatives. It was a powerful tool. It remains a powerful tool. And as residents and citizens of this democracy, we should never hesitate to communicate with our elected representatives.
Excellent. All right, throw me a few websites again and contact things.
Sure. To check out information about the conference, go to creatingchange.org. For information about the task force, go to thetaskforce.org. And if you want to join us for our live stream and check out stuff that's happening at the conference, you can go to thetaskforce.org/live. And follow us on Twitter with the hashtag CC15.
Wow, that's a lot of things. thank you for doing what you do, and hope that people hook up with you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
I have taken a wrong turn, but will I learn? When will I learn? Should I show them all my scars? Cherry red, bleeding burn. Like an angry apple tree, throw my apples if you get too close to me. But if I look to my right, will I see the one I fight for? If I look to my right, or if I turn to my left, will I see that I have kept my heart locked up so tight? Love, love, love is everywhere, but not a drop for me to drink. Tie me up and bind my feet, drop me in and watch me sink. Like an angry apple tree, I throw my apples if you get too close to me. But if I look to my right, will I see the one I fight for? If I look to my right, or if I turn to my left, will I see that I have kept my heart locked up, locked up? If I was 17, I could find it in between the cushions of somebody's couch. I could find it, I could find it. If I was 17, I could find it in a dream, a dime a dozen, a kind of love. I could find it, I could find it. But I'm not 17, and I lost it in between the birthday cakes and fast mistakes that roll by. Fight for.
Hey, thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with another program. I wish you peace.
Unbelievably painful.